Thank you.
Are mics on? Yeah.
Let's see. First session of the day, but yeah.
There we go.
Hello and welcome to the first session of the day. We're happy that so many people are joining us for our reimagination of the internet, of an interactive internet with a lot of 3D in it. This is Frederik Steinmetz, I'm Gottfried Hofmann, and we're both from Blender Diplom. We are running a business that's doing training and consultancy for Blender, the best 3D software in the world, and it's really the very best one. There's no better one. Who of you is using Blender, or at least knows how is using Blender a bit? Ah, that's nice.
Mm-hmm.
Ah, great.
Quite a few.
And then there's two people who unfortunately cannot join us on stage today, and that is Markus Lippich and Anja Kampria-Ollermann. They were the managers of this project. It was funded by by some foundation. And the idea was to do teaching, to do better teaching in a virtual world. You know, we had this COVID wave hitting Germany, and then many universities started remote learning. And the HFK Bremen is a university for the fine arts, and there is also a music department, and they got a grant to digitize their teaching so you can do better remote teaching and other things. And the audio people, of course, invested in better streaming, better recording equipment, better studio. And the parts with the fine arts, they had the problem that they wanted to have like virtual showrooms. Because the fine arts students, for example, a lot of sculptures are created and other kind of things, and they want to like represent this in the virtual world. So of course they wanted something 3D, like 3D exhibition spaces, and they also wanted to have like an option to do some live streaming or some way to get high quality audio into it, because they had this other department who were doing audio. And one thing they wanted to have is because back then, this was Metaverse was a craze and a hype, and lots of companies were popping up to do exactly this, like offering virtual exhibition spaces. They knew that this won't last forever, and they wanted to something that lasts. And that's why they wanted to have open source software, and they wanted to make this all open source and use only open source technology. And then they noticed that the open source technology can also be short-lived, because they looked at different kind of technologies like Dirt Room, and quite often they happen to get discontinued. And when they looked at hubs, the same thing happened. The hubs in the past was run by Mozilla. It was called Mozilla Hubs, and Mozilla decided to drop it. But this time the HFK said, okay, we are doing it anyways. Let's work on this. Let's improve the software. And fortunately, the Hubs Foundation came into place, and now it's community managed, and it's still alive and kicking. So that was definitely the right decision. And here you can see a few things about their requirements. They had the idea that you start when you're like a world that's close to their actual buildings. So on the top left, you see a photo of the actual entrance of the HFK, the fine arts part, and then in a moment you will see this in the virtual world. And then you also see that when the students, the idea was that you get from this somewhat a realistic part into a more open part for the students, where they can create their exhibitions like they want. And you notice that, of course, what the students created is kind of abstract, and there is no real concept of space anymore. And now let's... yes, it's running, I hope. Yeah, it's running. This is like, you see what you see as a photo, and we will start with the parts that already were possible in Hubs. And those are like simple interactive components, and this is what they had actually used. For example, you see on the left there is a water component in Hubs that you can have water, and you notice that, for example, the clouds, they're moving, you have a UV scroll component. You might notice there's some particles next to this door. This is also was already possible, and they wanted to have a lot of things that can make the user engage in their in the content they have. And for example, here, this is like shortcuts to the exhibitions. You can just click there and you go there. Or here you have the an idea that you can enter a different part. And this one is just a funny thing. You can like grab the blocks and place them somewhere else using rigid bodies. But let's now talk a little about what was possible before. Next. Next slide, please. Yeah.
Okay, so you can edit these rooms using Spoke, which is in a browser, but I don't really like it because I'm very used to Blender. And so if you have any understanding of Blender, go ahead and use that. And in Spoke, you don't have a few options that you don't have in Spoke. We'll get to them later. So these are the Hubs components, which are basically in the basic package. If you've ever used a game engine before, you probably know that you usually put components or logic onto a game object, and then it will sit there and execute the logic. So what we just saw on the left-hand side was a simple water. It's actually animated. You can set the wave height, wave speed, and all of this stuff. Then we, for example, have a link where you can link to any other room. You can link to any other web page. Very handy. You can play audio, and this is my favorite. You have rigid body physics, which first implies you can have collision with a player, but you can also drop a bunch of stones, let them fall down, and they will get simulated. This is the way you manage the... that's the next. You can also play video, which is also pretty nice. Okay, so the nav mesh, that's very technical. Let's skip that because we have...
Let's come back to our part, because what we've seen here, that was all integrated, but they wanted more. They wanted more interactivity, which you see, for example, here, this person, when they walk over the water, like these blocks appear and disappear. And this is things that is more a common thing, not the special components we had seen before. Like, you would have to like program this kind of thing. And this is where we came into play, because Hubs was introducing a concept that was called behavior graph. And that was something that was in early stages of development, and we helped port it over to a new Blender version. And I think when I talk about behavior graph, many of you have already seen this and worked with a behavior graph. So who's done work in Unreal Engine Blueprints? So who used Unity Visual Scripting? And I think most of you probably use Visual Script in Godot. So who has been using Godot Visual Script? Yeah, it's all the same thing. It's all the same thing. It's a so-called behavior graph. The idea is that you have interactivity, like programming, like program code, but you store it in a representation that is a graph, and then it gets interpreted by the game engine. And the nice thing is about those graphs is that you can easily represent them as a UI in the form of nodes. And there's many programs who are using this kind of paradigm. And now it's time, let's say, to standardize this. And of course, unfortunately, the Kronos Group, the people who brought us OpenCL, OpenGL, and GLTF transfer format, they're working on an add-on for GLTF to get behavior graphs directly into the file. That would mean you could, in the future, in theory, store an entire game or an entire interactive 3D application as one GLB file, and it then could go onto the web, where it might get interpreted by like A-Frame or something like that, or 3JS, or you could put it onto PlayStation using Unreal Engine and stuff, and you only have this one file that works everywhere. I mean, this is the future that it will happen, exactly like so. But this is like what we hope that could happen. And what's special about the behavior graphs in Hubs is that they're based on the Kronos standard, on an early draft, so it's still in a move, it's still developing, but you can already work with the technology of the future that hopefully will become this one standard, you know.
And okay, let's have a very brief look at what the behavior graph can do. If you use denotes in Blender, then you'll find there's one big difference, which is the flow. The flow is indicated by this triangle and the diamond. And the flow means no node gets executed unless unless one of those triangles triggers it. Whereas in cycles, geometry nodes, and so on, usually the tree gets executed backwards. So a light ray hits the surface, and then it checks what are the properties of the surface, and then it executes the entire tree. While in the behavior graph, we have triggers. And one of the triggers would be on start. That means you can initialize something. It's very important, for example, storing armatures. You have on tick, which is very important for animations. This is every frame, so 60 times a second. This trigger gets activated. Then we have the on interact. That means a player has clicked on an object. And we have the player collision enter. That means a player came close to an object. And we can define a zone, which is considered a collider. And here's an example. We've made an animation, which is opening and shutting a door. It's just a rotation around the y-axis. And if you click on the door, the animation on the top gets played. And the door opens. And if you click again, which is what the flip-flop does, every time you click, it changes state. It starts, the first click turns it on, the second click turns it off, and so on. Third click turns it on again. And you can see if it's off, it plays the same animation, but backwards. That's why the time scale is minus one, which is very handy because we can, with just three nodes, four nodes, plus we need to initialize the animation, we can open and close a door. So that's very handy for people who don't know anything about programming. There's no way to produce a syntax error here. Don't worry, you can still create null references. And the next thing would be we can store variables on the game objects. They have to be created once, and then you can access them, and you can use them to define a state of the object. You can use them to share animations or whatever, and do calculations, all that good stuff. Here would be an example of a behavior graph in action. Is this playing? Yeah. Yeah, okay. You can see you can click on the arrow on the left-hand side or on the right-hand side, and it will wrap. So basically what we did, we created a list of textures, we created a list of mannequins, and the indices match. So whenever we exchange the texture on the poster, the mannequin gets exchanged as well, and this is one click and gets broadcast to several objects, which means that it looks something like this. This part you can ignore, that just makes sure that we don't get negative indices or we don't get indices that are larger than list size. What's important is we set the variable that we have clicked and we set the index. This is the current index that both lists, the one that holds the mannequins and the one that holds the texture, store. And then we can use a custom trigger, which means we can broadcast the index and the fact that we want to trigger this now, that we want to execute the node tree that changes both. We want to execute that now, and that is done with a trigger. And you can see that the entity is not self like it was before, it's now other, and that means we can trigger this on some other object, which would be something like this. You can see we only have two. So we can make this list as long as we want, but unfortunately the way it works right now is we have to store every material and we have to pre-store the list. We cannot access the list items by name, which would be good because then we could just load the according list item by name, but right now we have to store a list integer signed, and then we we can check is the current index equal to the first one, then set this material, and if it equals to the second one, unset set this material, and so on. And we're getting very low on time, so let's just explain light baking real quick.
Yeah, this is the second thing we worked on, and that is light baking. And the idea here is that the artists, especially the sculptors, when they had an indoor scene, they usually the lighting, the sculpture, plays a very important role. And they wanted to have the same capabilities in the virtual world. And that would mean we have to do something that's called baking. The idea is that instead of this flat lighting we see here, you get lighting that is integrated into the textures. And it's for free, and it can be super complex. And we can run super complex lighting setups in the Cycles render engine in Blender, which is doing physical light transport simulation. And in the end, we store it in the textures, and more or less, we can then get the lighting for free in hubs. It's static, that's very important, but as long as nothing moves, it's we can get high quality, super perfect lighting. And it's basically for free when you count the, when you consider the render time. Unfortunately, it's definitely not for free in kind of bandwidth, because those light maps can become pretty big, but we're working on that as well. And here you see the original lighting situation we had created inside Cycles. So this is like the ground truth. And now if you compare this to what you see in hubs when it's in real time, it's pretty close. The hubs light maps, they're getting edited, it's additive. And if there's already some lighting there, then of course things are getting brighter. But otherwise, It's actually very close, and we're kind of happy about this. Unfortunately, the big baking button, it's not in Hubs yet. Same thing with the behavior graph. It's still in an experimental branch. And the same goes with, unfortunately, with the Lightmap Baker. It's still in a pull request. But we hope to get it in maybe until September when there is the next Blender conference. Please, we hope so. And then we'll make the backend button bigger. Currently, it's still small, but I want this to be the big baking button. It's because it's a one-click solution. And currently, in Blender, baking is a bit cumbersome. So we think this is a big thing, so a big button. But that's in the future. And now let's do a quick demo of the... let's do a quick demo here. And here you see the live room. And for example, you can do things like click there and open a door. Or here you can change the...
Das funktioniert nicht.
Oh, it's on the wrong one. I see what the problem is here. Here. So here we can do the demo. And we have one demo that we want to show. And that is you can look at something. And then something will happen. And that was something that was still missing in the controls. And it's something that's very common when you have something like a smartphone. People look at something in AR or something, or VR, and things happen. So this was a functionality we wanted to add. And now the last thing, before it's over, I just have to switch over here. And that is, you can take a look at it. You can take a look at it. It's at the very end. What? Okay, it's on the last slide.
It's immer noch nicht.
Start from current slide. Here it should be. Here.
There we go.
Here, you can go there using this QR code. You can go to the actual room that I've just shown you. And you can also join with others. And you can chat. You can talk to each other inside the room and talk about all the great exhibitions. It was Room of the Month, I think, in November 2024 for the current Hubs Foundation. And if you join there and have some fun and chat with each other and take a look at all the great works we have there. And if you want to like rebuild this, we have this here, this graph. We're doing this in the workshop, 1:20 p.m. over there in the South Town. Thank you.
Thank you. The QR code again.
Yeah.
And we have very little time for like maybe one or two quick questions, if there are any, over there.
But we'll be around.
Luckily, Lasse is very sportive.
Hi. A few years ago, we did a game with Blender Game Engine. And of course, it doesn't exist anymore in Blender since 2.8. So could I use your tool to replace Blender Game Engine and hope make my
it
game
would be great, again? But right now the logic is fairly limited because there's only very few people developing the Blender behavior graph.
And it's also like currently the Blender developers trying to get a better connection to other game engines. So the game engines would become like render engines for the content in Blender. Currently, there is a project running in Amsterdam where they're trying to create a game in Godot and to get a better connection between Blender and Godot at the moment. And we're hoping that this behavior graph might also move into Godot at some point. And then we would have really nice options to create the logic in Blender and run it in Godot. That would be awesome.
Have you ever considered having, it's a bit of a stretch, but have you ever considered having the behavior graph editable in world, like inside of VR? That's something that, because it reminds me a lot of Rec Room has something called circuits, where you can create these type of behaviors collaboratively inside of a VR environment, which is a really transformative experience, in my opinion. You can code behaviors.
Do you mean at runtime?
Sorry?
Do you mean at runtime?
Yes. Yes.
That would be a different part. Currently, there is an editor for Hubs that's called Spoke, where you can run at runtime, place things and change things. And that would be, it would have to go there, I think, not into the Blender side, because the Blender side is like a pure content. We are building the content and move it over. So if it's real time, it should go to Hubs. Spoke, it's called a project. Might be integrated at some point. Would be actually a good idea.
Okay, thank you. I believe the other questions you will take over the day, and you have still the workshop later on, so plenty of more time to act. And with that, let's freeze the stage for the next speaker. Do a quick change over of the microphones. Thank you again.